second job.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, it's what time? October, what is it? The 9th? Yeah.
9th.
Oh, man. I pulled out my fur G string. I'm ready for winter. Ready for it. I packed my Speedos away and it's time for winter time, buddy. Let me get Big Jimmy. What's up, brother?
Hey guys, how you doing?
I'm groovy.
Cool.
Yes, sir.
I'm all right. How are you doing?
And I think I just checked out.
You're still
what?
There.
Oh, I hear you.
Hold on here.
How are you doing?
Let's go one at a time here. Oh, by the way, we have a hard out at 8:30. I can't go over 8:30. Got my ass chewed last week, and I just...
Not going to do it again this week, huh?
No, I was told I can go... they want me there at 8. They can't do that, and we're going to make a little thing tonight, and Jimmy just dropped... And let me see who this is. Adrian or Carrie? Which one?
It's Adrian.
Hi.
Good
Adrian.
Evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And last
How
week,
are you today?
I thought I was playing. Oh. I was playing a good night, sweetheart. Good night. And nobody told me the damn thing wasn't playing. Thank you. I felt like a fool now. That's fine. You guys treated me bad. You probably owe me. That's fine.
You weren't feeling that well last week.
Oh, no, but, you know.
And we didn't realize.
Blog Talk is not letting me play anything, so I had to go another way. Now I can play some stuff, but... last week I was thought I was playing Good Night Sweetheart, and I'm going do 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 do, and there was no song and there was nothing but my dumb ass doing that. I felt oh my god, after the show I felt like a freaking fool. I said no.
Oh, we thought you was doing a cappella.
Why don't you shut up? Oh man, you guys ain't right, my buddies. And no wonder I did hear some giggling going on. But, man, these bastards. Okay, guys.
Rough crowd.
Let me see if Jimmy's back. I had to go and check something out. And Jimmy's not back. Yeah, Jimmy's back, but he hasn't pushed one yet. So we'll wait on him. I can't see the... switchboard. We got somebody in the chat room. Welcome. I can't see your name, but
I pushed one.
It's
Calder City.
Okay, Calder City. Oh yeah. Okay, Calder City Band. I got you. Okay, 440. You're on with Jimmy and Scotty.
Hello, 440.
And Adrian.
What's up, Scott? I can't go push
the button. Well.
Jim's up. I'm a pile of grievance.
Are we gonna do this week? Come on, kids. One at a time.
I thought I heard somebody say they were going to file a grievance against you.
That's what I can't go pushing buttons. That's Jimmy's job. He'll file a grievance on me.
Well, it doesn't matter because nobody's listening to your grievances anyway. So, what the hell?
Oh, man.
That's true, though.
Wrong.
You're right.
Wow.
He ain't lying, man. Damn. All
here,
right.
Here.
Take it away, guys.
Yeah.
You got anything good?
working, listening, seeing some of the more childish antics of some individuals for candidates and stuff. But other than that, you know, just trying to keep a even keel going.
Yeah, me too. I hit local 602 today. I'm going to say something right now, and I want to thank all the people out there listening. You're doing an outstanding job getting Brian and Margaret and Mike Turner's name out. I was never so proud today when people confronted me because they knew I was with Brian Keller. But that was cool. I want to thank them. Yeah, we got a candidate, we got a fighter, and we know it, and so do the people on the floor, don't they? I've never seen these people so scared. Brother Curry, I hope you kept your gloves because I got a feeling you're going to need them. Take it away, Scott.
Yeah. Gloves, and you might have to pull them. I'm not going to say it. That's not a nice thing. I don't even say it. Never mind. I have something
nice,
else
Scott.
To say. I am. I'll keep
okay.
It PG rated.
A little after going.
Just thinking, you know, never mind. I can't say it in a nice way, so I ain't going to say it at all. So anyway, yeah, he should be scared. I hope he's shaking in his boots. So, but we'll see what happens with that. You know, I mean, we have other people. I need to clarify what I said last week. I don't think people understood, or maybe I wasn't clear how what I meant. When I said people have choices and options for candidates, I said if you take the Curry people out of the whole equation and their whole slate, and you take the young kid from Mac out of the equation, I said there's still some choices. What I want people to do is use your head and look at those individuals and see who's going to offer you the best chance that you think you're going to have at a better leadership than what you have right now. And by doing that, hopefully, with a little bit of reasoning, you'll figure out that there's only one candidate for president. That's what I'm trying to get to last week. But
there's only one on their side for sure.
That what's that?
So there's only one of them on their side for sure.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you got a couple, three people. Well, at least two people, well, three maybe, for vice president that would get a little fire in the belly, and that's what we need right now.
Right, but a sitting administration, what it looks like is their focus is expanding the membership so that way they can control the whole deal. You know, I mean, they're not worried about expanding the auto sector. If anything, you got to balance out the level so that way not one has the power to remove them.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me get
ultimately,
Brother
they just
Paul.
Want to hold their positions.
Brother Paul, you are on, sir.
Okay. Greetings to rabble-rousers.
Greetings.
Greetings. Rabble-rousing. I'd like to make this point. We won the right to elect our leaders. If we elect the people that are already in there, we will accomplish nothing. We'll get more of what we've been getting for the last 20 years. Cooperation with management, capitulation to management. If you work in the plan, it'll be work speed up, outsourcing of jobs, unwillingness to confront management on their lunacy because that'll mean management won't want to give us more appointed jobs. If you're retired, it'll be the same as what you got for the last 20 years, which is nothing. Our union leadership has demonstrated that, in essence, they're just waiting for all the legacy retirees to die. So that's all I'd like to say. If we elect these same clowns again, we're going to get more of what we've gotten for the last 20 to 30 years.
That's right.
I think it'll be worse, Paul. I think it'll be worse because then we'll have a stranglehold on the
sure.
Control.
Yeah.
I think they misunderstood when the members said that they wanted to eliminate tiers. I think they misunderstood because they're eliminating the wrong tier.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody that votes for somebody that's been in the Solidarity House, they're out of your mind. Out of your mind. I can't believe they need to clean. We need to clean everybody out of that damn thing. Start the thing all over again.
Well, most of their supporters aren't all out of their mind. What it boils down to, they're the ones that are getting all the benefits of jointness. In order for jointness to work, management
right.
had to take care of about 10% of the workforce at the expense of the rest of us.
Right.
You know, so a lot of them are just voting for their trough. But if you're a relatively new worker, you're nuts to vote for these clowns. I remember just before I retired, they brought a two-tier. Many of us fiercely resisted it, but they had enough. They were able to convince enough people that's in our best interest to make the next generation live in poverty. You know, if you're a new hire, you're making about half the money I made in 2009, and I don't know what inflation made in the last 13 years or so, but that's half of what I made is not worth much now.
You're right.
You know, kind of put that context real quick, Paul. When I hired in 1985,
okay.
my starting pay was $11.01.
Okay.
That was 37 years ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ours was $6 and something, wasn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it was.
Six something.
That was double of what I, about double what I made in the small factory I was working in. That's why I jumped to General Motors. But, you know, the current low seniority people are not only working for low pay, but they're getting the crap worked out of them. You know, when I hired in, put in some time, you can get an offline job like sub-assembly or sanitation or booth cleaner or,
right.
you know, one of a zillion other jobs. But they've created a really corrupt system where you're basically your only path to get off the assembly line was to take an appointed job, you know. And we need to do something about those jobs, you know. Some of those jobs should just be available by seniority. You know?
Right.
Some of them I know require a little bit of something on the ball, but a good share of them, anybody on the plant floor can do them. And there's Brian is the only realistic choice you have out there if you want change.
That's it. What did you say, Paul?
I said Brian's the only realistic choice out there if you really want change.
Oh, for sure.
You have no argument out of me. I agree with you.
You can't even pick on people that are not supporting him, because I keep looking, and there's just a very few handful that are even bucking Brian. I see a lot of people supporting him that even people that in the past didn't. You know, people that I had seen speaking against
yeah.
them or changing their position. So I think, you know, it's starting to resonate with the people. They realize, hey, you know, the fear tactics don't seem to be working. All the political tactics they use in the past, we've seen them all. And they, you know, none of it's new. And I think it's just falling on deaf ears.
Yeah.
People are actually starting to wake up a little bit.
Yeah. Especially if you make $14 an hour. And you realize you could make more money in a car wash, you know, and might even have better working conditions. Kind of hard to speed things up in some workplaces. But, you know, and I think the worst thing about working in a plant now is the work speed up. But you just get comfortable with your job, and the engineers are out running around looking for something to add to your job. I don't know if I said this before, but when I worked at Pontiac East Assembly, I worked with a guy who had come from West Virginia, and he told me he wished he'd stayed in West Virginia and worked in a coal mine rather than working on it in an assembly plant, you know, because they were being very ruthless with work speed ups at that particular plant. And the thing is, that's something our union used to fight. Now it's become institutionalized through continuous improvement. And you look at our national agreements, they call for our union to work toward competitiveness and all that jargon.
People really don't have anything to lose, though. I mean, if they fight, if they stand and fight, and it doesn't work out, they can go elsewhere and probably do better. So why not fight?
Yeah, go get a pay raise and work at Starbucks or Target or even Amazon.
Yeah, a little bit ago we were saying that, and it was kind of a joke, but now it's really coming to fruition. It's really starting to happen. There's more and more jobs around us that are paying better than what their starting wages is. And so now they can enjoy the new reality they have to create.
Yeah. The UAW is really holding up progress. If they'd get out of the way, people would have started a real union. But the UAW is an institution with a great history, but the past few years have been pathetic. They compromised themselves and basically threw their principles in the toilet.
That's really interesting. I seen that video that John Barbosa was talking about, and kind of the separation, divorce, as they put it, of the CAW and the United Auto Workers.
Sure.
And, you know, what was going on at the time. And I was always under the impression that you had to be certified if you wanted to organize. You're already a union member, but you're not happy. And I didn't know, I'd like to know more about exactly what the process is where they where they seceded from the UAW, their assets. As far as I understand, they kept everything. They kept their locals. I thought, you know, if you decertify, everything goes back to the international.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know the process either exactly how it went, but I went to a conference one time when one of their leaders was speaking. You know, I think one of the key points to this reason they didn't want to get involved in concessionary bargaining, it really masked incompetence on the part of management, because the more concessions we give, what it boils down to, management can mismanage and still make money. If you pay peanuts, you can make money. And when you look at the General Motors situation, about 50% of the market share in 1978, and now their market share is in the teens. And what was it? They still made, was it $10.6 billion last year?
Record profits, but they've got less market share than they've had in decades. Right. That's a really interesting point.
Right.
They made their money by reorganizing and restructuring the business to draw every dollar out of the business that they can. But actually, and I remember this was also an argument back around 07, 08, 09, that period, where at that point they were not building products that Americans wanted. Now they've actually got decent products. They've completely turned their product lines around.
Yeah.
And, you know, people want their vehicles, but they're suppressing the sales to keep the price high.
Yeah. Well, they also, what they've done is they suited the niches that they didn't think were profitable enough. But basically, what they've done is they basically threw away a generation of consumers. I mean, most people, they start out with a lower paying job and buy a cheaper car. And as their income advances, they buy a more expensive car. And General Motors only wants to build the things that cost $40,000 or more. And that's how
it
reaches
a lot of people.
You can't
buy a $10,000 car anymore.
No.
They don't have an entry-level vehicle anymore. They had the Focus, even the Focus before they removed it from the U.S. manufacturing base, and they moved it off to Mexico or before they completely eliminated it. You're talking, $16,000, $20,000. I mean, it's not an entry-level vehicle.
Yeah. Ford did the same thing. They had the top-selling vehicle in the United States in the Ford Taurus, and what did they do? They discontinued it. I mean, in most industries, you would get fired for a bonehead move like that.
Yep. What about the commercial market? They had – there was no Caprice. Every single police vehicle on the road was a Ford at one point, and they let the market go. The full-size van, that's another one.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it –
taxi cabs, police cars.
And the thing is, the platinum had, or the platform had been paid for decades. You know what I mean? It really hadn't changed it much, but they still sold.
Right, and they Ford was painting the picture that, you know, cars weren't selling in America. They were selling. It's just that the big three turned the market over to the competitors, and during the during the GM bankruptcy in the 2009 era, Honda was making record profits, and pretty much all they built at that point was small cars. You know, that makes me wonder why Honda, Nissan, Toyota, Kia, they can all make money paying American workers about what a worker makes at a big tree factory, and they can make money, but the big tree can't in those niches.
Well, it almost looks contrived. I mean, back in 07, what forced all the concessions was the fact that the only thing that was built in the United States were all high fuel mileage vehicles, the big trucks and the Mustang and the Chevy. They had the Volt. That was the only really fuel-efficient vehicle, but it's almost like it was contrived. We know that the fuel prices were artificially high because people were purchasing futures to drive the price up. So, I mean, the whole thing looks like it was all contrived. No, we could buy futures, drive up the price. We can show our books in the red for a couple years, and then we'll get the workforce to take concessions. And then, afterwards, after we get in a good position as far as labor, we'll go ahead and reverse the market.
Yeah.
We'll sell off, divest ourselves of futures, the price of gas will fall, And it worked.
Right.
If that's what their plan was, it worked real well.
Sure. Well, it goes back to what Dave Yetta said, that the union's playing checkers and management's playing chess. The leadership of UAW, is so poor because of a lack of training, the nepotism where you put your son on staff where he doesn't know anything about bargaining. The sad thing to me is our union leaders are so clueless that they don't seem to understand that, to use the crude term, they've been bitch-slapped constantly by management, they don't seem to get it. When we gave concessions, when we originally started that, it was supposed to keep plants open and keep people in the workforce, that had the opposite impact. They closed more plants and outsourced more work and got cheap pay scale on top of it. Management achieved all their goals, and our union leadership didn't achieve any of the goals that a union leadership should be shooting for. They didn't keep people working, and they didn't provide for a decent wage and working conditions and pensions.
Well, the funny thing about the pensions is, pretty much any benefit. You know, Brian had a valid point. With as few members as there are currently, as compared to what there were before, and they were paying pensions, they were paying these high wages, there's no reason they can't pay it now.
No,
the workforce is like one-third of what it was.
Yeah, I got to speak at the 2015 bargaining convention. That's a point I brought up. I said that I was grateful for my union, bargain pension, but I wasn't there to talk about pensions. That I was concerned about people that were having to work for half the pay I made when I retired, and that they'd gotten rid of so many workers that they could easily pay the ones that were left. And, this kind of reasoning just falls on deaf ears when you're talking to the leadership. Because for one thing, they have to cooperate with management if they want to continue to build a management-funded appointed bureaucracy. If they don't help management achieve their goals, they're not getting more joint funds money.
Well, that's the other thing, too, the number of representatives that they had, that they have currently versus, you know, you're not representing but a third of the membership. What do you need twice the number of people doing it?
Right. I mean, what good is a JAR rep? Doesn't help the membership at all.
It's great for the company.
Yeah. They sit up there in an air-conditioned office working 6 or 7 days a week as many hours of overtime as management's willing to pay them. And they're doing, you know, it doesn't help relieve the stress on the workforce. It doesn't bring jobs into the plant. Doesn't help increase the pay scale. You know, almost all these jobs that have been created were created to enforce management's will on the membership. I mean, why should we have union people involved in increasing throughput or, you know, whatever you want to call it at your particular plant? You know, on a metal stamping plant, it was throughput, but, you know, on assembly line, it's greater productivity. They want to add a nutter bolt to a person who's working 55 seconds a minute. And we have union people helping them do that.
Yeah, well, for the line workers, one bolt's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Talking about 500 bolts if you're building 500 units a day.
Mm-hmm. Means you don't have time to wipe your snotty nose. You know, but as Jim's uncle said, that they dehumanize the workplace. When you can barely do your job, if you got a runny nose or you're thirsty, it's a problem.
Well, if it was more equal, it would be such a problem. You might have one job that's completely overloaded and overcycled. You can't hold it down hardly. And the guy next to you's got, you know, a handful of parts and sitting there on their phone or whatever.
Yeah. Right, exactly. The committee man's friend, girlfriend.
Yeah, normally somebody tied in.
Yep. If you got an easy job, you're politically connected usually.
Are we the only ones here?
And I'm back.
I missed you, Don.
240, I'm putting you on.
It's me, Stephanie. I just wondered where everybody was at. I was just listening in, but I thought, wow, there's nobody here tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful quiet tonight, isn't it?
Yeah, for now, anyway.
Yeah, for now. They're stepping all over each other here in a few minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a hard out at 8:30. There's nothing I can do about it, and we might be suspended for a month. That's what I've been told, because I screwed up.
Uh-oh.
And I'm not going to discuss it now, but I'll tell you all about it later. I'm fighting it, so we'll see. So if we're not here next Sunday night, I'll see you in a month.
Well, if there's anything
can
do to help, let us know. I mean, we need this on for the election, right?
Yeah.
If possible.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm talking to him. In a few minutes. I've talked to him 3 times already. So, well, I'll work on it. You guys have a good show, and I'll be listening. And push one on your keypad. We got a lot of people on the switchboard. Push one if you want to join the conversation. Talk to beautiful Stephanie and Jimmy and Scotty and Mike and Paul and all the Hee-Haw gang and beautiful Adrian. There you go.
All right.
I'm done. I'm done. Go.
Why
don't you invite some of those international reps that are listening on to give us their sales pitch?
I sent an invitation out just a bit ago. Can I talk to Brian about it real quick? I did invite Margaret Mock.
You should.
Rich Boyer. I think of the list.
Mike Booth.
Mike Turner comes on the show on his own. Yeah, Mike Booth, Rich Boyer, Margaret Mock, and LaShawn English.
Yeah.
Them all invitation, so we'll see if they respond. I mean, we're already a half hour into the show.
Right.
But
where's Mom? When's Mom coming? Scott?
Stop it.
Mom coming? No? Oh, okay.
I didn't know Mom was excited. Stop it.
Okay. Sorry. Goodbye. I'm gone again. Jimmy, push one if you want to get back on, buddy. Well, I'll put you on anyway. You're on.
Yeah,
Jim.
There you go. You don't get a choice.
On again. Boy, look at what they're doing to me. They're dropping all these numbers. Go ahead, guys.
I hear you, Tom.
Well, press one if you want to join this conversation. We'd like to hear from you. Like to hear your thoughts and what's going on.
Not really, but...
I don't know.
With fives. And like I told them, hey, people, when they come and run this shit on you, ask them to stand on their record. If you look at their record, it's about 2.5 pages of concessions since 1981 when they opened the Warren memo. And then ask them about the Warren memo, and then ask them what are those concessions they got back. And I'm done, folks. Keep talking.
Did you say 2.5 pages, Jim?
Yeah.
Oh, that page must be about 10 feet long, then.
It's almost like Santa Claus' Christmas work.
Well, we have contracts to stop that.
Yeah. Should have had.
Well, actually, we had contracts to promote that, Jim. Continuous improvement, competitiveness, efficiency.
Well, how do you say that when they told us, oh, this gives you job security? Think about that, you know? No wonder why the Indian warned us about that forked tongue.
Yeah. After a while, they kept us employed. They just sold out the next generation.
If you stop and think about it, the last four contracts have all supposed to have been about job security. And if you look at the job security that they said that it has in the gold contracts, look at all the plant closings and how many people we've lost. Kind of hard to believe that it's all about job security when you've lost over 100,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like the name Right to Work, isn't it? Right to Work, it suggests that it does something good for you.
Yeah, you can think, I think, was it Bob King? I think it was Bob King.
No,
you can think.
It was. You're right. They told him to keep that shit out of Lansing, Snyder did.
Yeah. Well, they redefined what job security means.
Right to Work.
Job security used to mean that when you got laid off at the truck plant in Flint, Michigan, you ended up at the stamping plant, the engine plant, or Buick City in the city of Flint. Now it means we got a job for you in Texas. You got a couple of weeks to make up your mind what you're going to do.
Well, that and job security contractually was, you know, this plant's allocated for this product, this plant's allocated for this, and this plant's, you know, and those plants disappeared.
Right.
You know, and the latest, you know, to violate our contract, and they didn't fight it, instead they put it in the national contract vote, was Lordstown. They
right.
clearly violated the national contract, the language on that. We should have went on a strike nationwide at that point, and they didn't do that.
Right. Well, like I said, it's an example of the union getting bitch slapped and not even have sense enough to understand that that's what management was saying to them, that we're going to close any plant anytime we want to, regardless of what our contract says.
Sure. Started back in the early 90s. They'd do is they'd have somebody come from corporate and they come through the plants and they're going to close the plants. And what they did was that showed that one community, what happened to the other community, if you don't do what we did, we'll close this plant and we'll jerk it out of here.
Right.
And that was allowed. That was allowed.
Right.
Going back to, well, to Jokic's time.
Yeah.
And he allowed that to happen, and every president has allowed that to happen.
Right.
Like I said, when Lordstown closed,
Hi.
Go ahead. Oh, so when Lordstown closed, Dennis Williams should have taken us out on a national strike right there at that point.
Right.
But we know now why he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yep.
So, you know, it's.
Oh, what about in the future if you were to shut down a plant and people are making? Go ahead.
But
he was soliciting non-union work for his cabin. Remember what Williams was doing, people. This is that same team, right, Ray? Right, Ray?
Right. What was the other caller? What did you say? Your question?
So what about in the future when you got people making $14 an hour and they close a plant and they want to transfer and they literally can't afford to?
Right, right. Or there's nowhere for them to go.
Well, you got people making $14 an hour. They can't even afford the vehicles that they manufacture. They got an old beat down car and then their plant closed on them. They want them to transfer halfway across the country. They literally can't afford it.
They can't afford to commute from Saginaw, Michigan to Flint, Michigan to work. I know a kid who was in that boat.
Okay, can I interrupt for a minute? I got an email wanting me to play, I don't know what it is, but Jason Castleman put it on. It's five minutes long. Do you want me to play it?
Sure.
We'll try it, and if you guys want me to stop, just somebody holler.
I can assure both you and your viewers that there's absolutely no
somebody's making some noise
whatsoever. Yes, of course. I've heard the same rumor myself. Yes, thanks for calling and not reversing the charges. Yes, bye.
This here is a copy of the monitor's report. It states specifically there's 19 open cases yet. My question is, do we know who that is? And how is that going to affect the IEB board when the investigation is done? Are we going to be running elections again if one of you gentlemen get in? How do we know? There's 19 more investigations. They say in here that you guys try to conceal some stuff coming out of another region. It's right in the monitor's report. We're not making it up. It's right here. So how do we know that you guys will be the guys representing this membership when it's all done? Because everybody says they didn't do anything until they're caught.
Everybody that's running for vice president has been vetted by the monitor. The monitor refers to the Department of Justice.
Being under investigation does not stop one from being vetted. You haven't been accused of a crime. I just simply ask, have you been spoken to regarding any type of corruption? So to say that you've been vetted, that means you're not one of the 19, is not really true.
To run for vice president a year and a half ago, and to run for vice president again. That is very disingenuous to try and challenge somebody's integrity by leading people to believe that they have potential legal issues. And I've actually been vetted twice over the last 4 years.
Oh, yes, sir. Snotty beamed me twice last night. It was wonderful. Shall I have Snotty beam you down, sir? Beam him down.
Yes, sir. This is part of this.
Why didn't somebody tell me my ass was so big?
the hell is this?
Hold on.
Let me speed it up.
Buck Lorman.
Curry was actually elected by the International Executive Board pursuant to the Constitution.
Am I on?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the question is posed.
My question is, do we know who that is? And how is that going to affect the IEB board when the investigation is done? Are we going to be running elections again if one of you gentlemen get in? How do we know?
The first time that this language was actually used was in 1970 at the passing, fall, and the unfortunate plane crash of Walter Reuther, when Leonard Woodcock actually was elected by the International Executive Board also pursuant to the same constitutional language. Rory Gamble was elected upon the removal of Geary Jones pursuant to the same constitutional language. I was not appointed by Rory Gamble or the International Board. I was elected pursuant to the Constitution, and I stand here now available for re-election, and it has nothing to do with the corruption actually taking place. It's got something to actually do with the Constitution. The Constitution that we most recently had a convention for, and our delegates reaffirmed with a number of different provisional changes, but that Constitution stands true, stands loud, and it's our foundational pieces from the past. Thank you.
We'll beam you back, sir.
I can respond to that and his leave of absence.
This is Chuck Browning.
Geary Jones announced to the International Executive Board his intent to take a leave. The leave that he notified us he was going to take was within board policy at that time.
Everyone
board policy has changed since then. But he requested to take a leave. The rest of the International Executive Board was quite relieved. It had been quite a distraction. We were in the middle of Big Three negotiations. There were two issues to be decided at that point to accept the leave, which was in the policy of the board at that time, and to replace him with a temporary president. A motion was made. I made that motion. The board took action, and Geary stepped aside from his position, and shortly thereafter was indicted and permanently removed, and the board elected a new president.
Yeah, I'm getting a question.
Thank you. Time's up. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry, for wanted to hear this, and thank you, Jason Castleman, for posting it on UAW Factory. Well, hold on. Yeah, UAW Factory Whistle Show. There you go, guys. Go ahead.
Essentially, what they're saying is that if there's a vacancy for any reason after the elections, that you're not going to hold a special election, not like the local elections, where if you have a vacancy, the bylaws say that you have to hold a special election in a certain period of time to reelect. What will happen is the IEB will go ahead and hold that election for you. They'll choose who they want in the same manner that they did Rory Gamble, Ray Curry, and even Leonard Woodcock.
Yeah. I think the sad thing about all this corruption is the unions demonstrated that they, with the one-party system, they won't clean their own nest. Only avenue to getting rid of corruption up to this point is federal indictments, and that's a real sad commentary in our union. I mean, we know the Teamsters was corrupt, but they didn't have near this many people indicted.
No. Not at all.
You know, what he said was false, because of the situation, he was... When Gamble was going out, he brought Curry up. He appointed him, and then the IEB voted to secure that nomination or that appointment, correct?
That's what it sounds
Anybody?
Like.
Exactly. Now, we know what happened. That's exactly what happened. Gamble's on his way out. Hey, I got your man right here. Every vote on this? Every aye? Okay, aye. We're all good. There you go. There's your new president. I'm out of here. So we just passed the torch. So what he said was somewhat factual, but probably incorrect on how it actually transpired. I guess it is.
Yeah, but if there was a vacancy out of the 19 people that are under investigation, if, let's say, for instance, the top four people or the top four positions are filled with people that are under investigation but not currently under indictment, once they're seated, what would be the process? The process would be that they would leave, maybe take a leave of absence.
Yeah.
The IAB would vote on whether or not they get a paid or unpaid administrative leave. They go under indictment, and then they go before the grand jury or whoever. And what would be the process for filling their position? You could potentially have one of the other members could also be investigated and later found.
That's right.
Guilty. So then now you have somebody who is a criminal going to vote on possibly giving somebody a paid administrative leave while they're under indictment.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? We don't know
and
how
all,
many. Who are these 19 people?
Right.
And they also make sure they appoint or whatever or elect someone that won't go after them to remove their pension.
Right. I wish, I hope that happens. 260, you're on, 586. I think that's Brian, 586 again. You're, well, here, now you're on. 810, you are on. Everybody's on, so if you're not going to talk, please mute your phone. There's a lot of background noise.
I'd like to say this. When it came down to Ray Curry talking about the Constitution and upholding the Constitution and the Constitution being loud and all, did he forget about Articles 2?
Absolutely.
Section 1, to improve working conditions, to create uniform system of shorter hours, higher wages, health care, pensions.
Yeah.
And on top of that, then you look at Bob King. Bob King stated there's no way that they're going to negotiate to get rid of temps and tiers because these companies would find themselves in bankruptcy and we'd be repeating history again. Did he not say that?
He did say that. Yeah, he said that. He said that in 12 and then 15 and then again in
What do you think Ray Curry's mindset is? It's the same thing. They all got the same mindset. They're not going to get rid of the tier and temp system.
Right.
But
yeah,
the United States,
the one thing that
the United States, the currency is the world currency. Meaning we don't have to be viable and competitive with foreign labor markets. The purpose of the U.S. dollar is strong is because of the middle class and our purchasing power. But if they keep weakening the middle class and the purchasing power, then the U.S. dollar is going to continue to get weaker. So my thing is we have to focus on the middle class here in the United States. They need to bring these jobs back. There is no way that these companies will survive if they're dependent on China and these other markets to get these semiconductors and these other parts for these vehicles.
Right.
Because if we have another outbreak of COVID or some other outbreak, and then we got part shortages, I mean, that's enough to cripple these companies.
Right.
So these jobs got to come back. We have to get rid of the tier and temp system. It's a given. They cannot move all the manufacturing out of the United States without collapsing the dollar.
Yeah.
They need us. This is their largest market is the United States. My thing is they're in the middle of this transition of going from combustible to electric. The markets are not doing very good. They got part shortages. They're talking about another hit with COVID. They're not in the position.
It's time to do something.
Yeah, it's time to go after these companies now.
Now.
These companies have been making global profits in the billions.
Now.
And
if you wait till they're strong again, then they're not going to be pliable. They're not going to talk to you. They're not going to do anything. Not that they want to anyway, but now would be the time.
Yeah, this would be the best time to go after these people. My thing is they can't make money without us.
Right. Well, the one
if
thing
you guys
are going to
keep listening, hold on, please. I'm not done. If you guys are going to keep listening to these puppets, like even my president, he's bad-mouthing me on these other union pages. All these other people sitting there bad-mouthing me. Brian was never elected. Brian never held position. What's kind of funny, when I was on the forum and the people that said I never held position, they didn't dispute that on the forum, now did they? Because I stated what positions I held and what I did. They are scared of me getting elected because they know I'm going to clear house and get rid of this foolishness.
That's right.
So stop getting played. If you guys are going to fall for that same stuff that we got, that you guys fell for back in 2018 when I ran against Gary Jones, and now Gary Jones went behind bars and you guys got screwed, don't get played twice.
Yeah, but there's a major difference between 18 and now. You're
well,
not
I understand
going
that. We got
delegates.
Direct voting now versus right. delegates from before, but either way.
Right, that's huge.
Don't get played.
Yeah. Everybody has got background noise, TV or radio or something on. Please mute your phone. Thank you.
Well, one thing they didn't want to acknowledge, Brian, is you were never involved in concessionary bargaining. You know, the reason these companies can't be competitive is because they have too many layers of bureaucracy. They have too many layers of management that the Japanese, Korean, and German counterparts don't have.
That's
and
right.
What our union is doing is they're mirroring they're becoming a mirror image of management. They're building a bigger and bigger bureaucracy. They're ignoring what the people want that are out in the workforce.
Well, the problem was that was introduced when team concept and joint ventures came into the mix with all these, processes that the Japanese came up with. And
right.
I don't believe there should be any type of team concept or joint venture. There has to be a fine line between our union and management.
And
when you've got union members doing management functions, there's an issue.
Right. Well, the thing is, a lot of people think that team concept promoted teamwork, but it doesn't. It promotes chaos and confusion and malice between the workers on the plant floor. Because
and I'm not disagreeing. My question is, though, we've been going through this for the last 43 years.
Yep.
We've had 1.5 million auto workers in 79 and 150,000 today. Now, they're
right.
talking about getting rid of all combustible engines. They want all the platforms to be electrical vehicles by 2035. So how long are we going to continue to go along with what management and the leadership has been telling us when we know they've been lying and deceiving us and threatening us to ratify these concessionary
sure.
tentative agreements to keep us competitive and viable
right.
with countries like
they're
Mexico and China?
Yeah.
We can't be viable and competitive.
Well,
we're not China. We're not Mexico. Our wages are different. Our cost of living is
right.
different. Everything is different. There's no way we can be viable and competitive with these other countries.
Our culture
is not
different.
Possible.
You know, you bring up a point about the contract vote, Brian. One thing you could put an end to is these re-votes on contracts. No should mean no. If the membership votes no on a contract, it should be renegotiated. Not, brought up for a second or a third vote.
Well,
with
but,
press.
But see, you, and I what about the problem with that, what the problem is with that is when you look at Bobo and John Deere, all they do is they go back to the table, they reverse some words, push some cash
right.
around, and they bring the same contract back to you.
Right.
And then they said, we renegotiated it. Right?
Yep.
So the answer is not that. The answer is reforming the leadership and getting representatives that are going to represent the interests of the membership and that are going to be transparent and fight.
That's the key.
Somebody with a backbone.
That's it.
And when they did go back and renegotiate Gian's contract, they came back with, like you said, with exactly the same language. The only difference was the signing bonus was bigger. That's advantageous for the international to negotiate a big signing bonus for you because they get a percentage of that out of your dues.
But see, that's where you got to get rid of bonuses, right? Just wipe them out. Get rid of the bonuses.
Yeah, Victor Ruther never
bought them. Get rid of the memorandum of understanding, the MOUs. We got to get rid of those, right?
Mm.
That way, once you start getting rid of the bonuses and the MOUs, you'll get rid of a lot of that dumb shit where the people, you know, where the membership keep ratifying these agreements because all they see is a $3,500 sign-on bonus or $10,000 sign-on bonus. But my thing is if the contract is negotiated, then we have to get rid of the MOUs because once that contract is ratified, it should stay that way for the length of the contract. So it's love to go back to 3-year contracts. 4 years and 6 years are way too long.
It is.
Right.
It gives management that much time to violate their contract because they know the international union's not going to stand up to them. You know, what happened with the signing bonuses, as one the writer put it several years ago, if you want to catch a big sucker, catch big bait. I mean, I think it was an embarrassment to our leadership in the Flint area that production people kept voting down contracts. Buick City voted twice on a contract. Management got what they wanted. They closed Buick City. Peregrine, another GM plant, voted 3 times on a contract before it passed, and GM closed the plant.
See, that's where you need a leadership.
The same thing. Right.
You
sure,
need a leadership with the backbone.
I agree with you.
The problem is when you look at, say, St. Louis Minivan or Lordstown, they announced those plant closings before the contract expired, right? So that made them in violation of the contract. And then you see what's going on with Belvedere right now. When those type of things happen, then the union has to call a strike and shut these companies down until they reverse their actions. If they're not going to reverse their actions and the plants stay shut down, they can't make no money. But you can't sit there and negotiate an agreement and then backpedal right before the contract expires and say, okay, well, we're going to get rid of Lordstown.
Yeah, you got
but that's what that's what they're doing. They don't care because they knew that Lordstown was going to reopen as a different company.
Well,
they don't care because the
union don't have a backbone to stand up and fight for the membership.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it's about the membership. They enter these neutrality agreements. Basically, what the company is doing is they'll open the front door to let them organize and sign cards. They'll help them organize it, and the payoff is that it's going to be a low-tier plant. It's going to be a low-wage plant or a subsidiary.
Sure.
Can I
see, that's what they don't tell you when they – I'm sorry.
I'd like to interject for a second. What make you think company is in violation of the contract when they have the right to reopen it given by all of the members who ratify these contracts? So they reopen contracts without your knowledge, a ratified contract at that, and do not bring it back before the membership for a vote.
Right, the MOUs.
I understand that, but the membership can only base their ratification vote off of what they're being told by their leadership. And if the leadership is lying to them and deceiving them and threatening them,
that's the key.
And don't have the backbone to stand up to management, then there's an issue. We need to reform the leadership.
What I'm trying to say is that this is all done before the contract is brought to you to ratify.
That's right.
They already
have plans to do
exactly what they're doing.
And I agree, because normally these companies are rolling out a 5 to 10 year plan. meaning the right. Solidarity House has a 5 to 10 year advance on what's going on with your facility.
Right. Well, you know that they knew what was going on in Lordstown. You know that they knew it in advance. You know that they knew that the company was going to bring in a subsidiary, and you knew that the deal was that they would allow them to organize and help them to organize it.
Right.
Let them in the front door, and that's why they didn't fight them. It's not because they don't have the backbone. It's because their interests are more important than the interests of the membership. They're worried about self-preservation.
They don't have a backbone either. They don't have a backbone either. They don't know how to negotiate in a global economy. So they got this mindset, if you can't beat them, join them. Because Bob King said, we are not getting rid of tier systems or temps because the big three will find themselves back in bankruptcy again. That's their mindset.
Right. $4 gas back then.
Yeah.
So he's comparing 2015 situation to when they were unprofitable because of fuel. You know, that's what he's selling the membership. That's not what they're thinking. They're more worried about dues and drawing dues from these subsidiaries. They're in bed with the company. The companies. You know, they know in advance that this plant's going to close, and they're going to come in and they're going to bring low-tier workers, or they're going to bring a separate company, and they're helping them to organize it. You're talking about 80% car checks, 100% car signatures. This is what they're bragging about. Well, they're shooting fish in a barrel because the companies, these are agreements they're making with the companies in advance to sell out the traditional rate workers.
This started happening in the 1990s when Ford wanted outsource some work to Johnson Control, and the union allowed it, and management helped them organize Johnson Control. So,
exactly, that's what's going on right now.
Now the thing is, vote for the UAW because the company wants you to have the UAW, and there's a reason the company wants you to have the UAW because it's company union. But the thing is, our union leaders don't lack backbone. They lack a game plan that advances the worker. They've got a lot of courage when it comes to fighting for what they want.
For their own. Right. That's
right. And what
they'll take
and what Bob King,
on strike for more appointed jobs.
And what Bob King did was he lied, and we know that, and people should be smart enough to know that. And the flip side of that, if you go to the back of your national contract, which people don't ever get to see, you have to look at the master and go to the back of that, it has the language on plant closures, product assignment, longevity of the plants. That information's there, and it goes out into the future. It's broadcasted. So that, like I'm saying, Brian's right. They know in advance what they're going to be doing with this plant, that plant, and that plant.
Sure.
In the meantime, they bring out the movie screen like they're doing at the other plant. They're saying for the Wagoneer, oh, you guys are doing so bad, we're going to scare the snot right out of these people. You're doing so bad, we're going to close the plant. If you don't do this, this, and this. And that's baloney.
Yeah.
Baloney.
They're leaning out the workforce at the bottom, but at the top, they're not cutting the layers of management.
No,
that's where their high costs are.
Not enough Indians.
Management and the engineers at most of these facilities at the D3 outnumber the workforce at least 2-1. Some places it's 3-1.
Yeah, and you got to work harder to support what one of our members called office rats. Work harder on the floor so that gyro can work 60 or 80 hours a week and, you know, do nothing toward building a product. We are carrying layers of management at the top of the union and within the corporation. They're getting flogged harder and harder to support that dead weight.
Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
It's George. How are you doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah, when I hired in Truck and Bus in 1978, we had one supervisor for, I think, 150 people. Now how many supervisors they got for 40 people, probably one. You
right.
Know, we got too many chiefs and not enough Indians.
Well, on top of that, I mean, and then they're using our team leaders to sit there and narc on our own members, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, they're running the place. Team leaders
and,
are running the show.
And,
yeah.
And that manager people and engineers are figuring out more and more ways on how to speed the lineup and cut more jobs.
Yeah. There's been a sharp change there at the truck plant, as I hired in 78 also, and I remember when I was laid off one time, I had been working in the body shop, and I thought the line speed was fluctuating, and the foreman said,
yep.
No, it wasn't. But
we
when I was laid off, I got a check for about $180 when I was laid off.
Yeah, they caught one of the superintendents with a switch underneath his desk speeding the line
yep.
up. I think we
yep.
got about $3,000 or $4,000 for that.
Yeah, I was laid off, so I only got a couple hundred. But the point is, the union at that point in time, the union fought speed up vigorously. Now they have helped management enhance the speed up process. It's very fine tuned. You know, the union is a willing participant in speed up now.
Okay, who was on here that went down to Pontiac East, was working at Pontiac East?
That was me.
I went to Pontiac East from Truck
okay.
and Bus and Flint.
Okay.
And I got laid off and got called to the proving grounds.
Oh,
well,
okay.
we got called to the proving grounds. They took the 50 highest seniority laid off employees. And Donnie Douglas was president at the time, and he's tried to sneak about 20 of his good old boys in down there. And
right.
I think actually Donnie Douglas went to prison.
He did. He went
yep.
to prison. Jay Campbell got sentenced, but I think he died from colon cancer. Another one of his henchmen, the guy that was over skilled trades, he was sent to and died.
But anyway,
you
I just want to jump on here and say hey to everybody, Adrian, Brian. I think I heard Stephanie.
I appreciate
in there.
That, George.
So
hi,
I'm gonna step back and just listen in.
Hey, George.
You take care, George.
Is that Stephanie?
I'll call you tomorrow, George. I'll call you tomorrow, George.
All right, sounds good, Steph.
Have a good
I'm
night.
I'm on the side.
But the reality is the membership need to stop listening to these clowns. These people will say anything to keep me from getting elected so they can stay into power and they can continue to take us down the wrong path. And I'm telling you, we are on borrowed time right now. We do not have time to sit back and sit there and get played over and over and over again. If we don't
yeah.
reform this leadership, I'm telling you, the first time we get rid of direct voting, they are going to get rid of – the first time we get rid of that federal oversight, they're going to get rid of direct voting.
Yeah. Yeah, this is
yeah,
our well. Last chance. I think it's our last chance to do something.
I was going to bring something up, too, if I could. I've been listening, but I've been kind of doing something, too. You guys talked about early on, you know, our last, how many agreements were about job security. And, you know, we could look at history, like what Brian said, too. The bottom line is, you know, the companies, it was their idea to create this co-partnership, pro-company union in the mid-80s because of all the people that were laid off. And that was their solution to it. From 78, 79 to, like, 83, 84, we had over 100,000 auto workers laid off in America. That was their solution, is that we need to partner up. We need to be buddies in a business. And at the
right.
time, like, you know, that's when we went from 1.5 auto workers, a million auto workers, down to what we have today. And the Solidarity House, you know, maybe they fought it at first in the ranks, but since then it became the culture, and that's what the culture is today. And the bottom line is that plan did not work. It did not secure job security. In fact, we can see what it did. And we can't continue down that path. It's that simple. Because especially like what Brian said with the electrification, I see it. I don't want to be the bringer of really bad news, but
it might be their final play with the auto industry. They shuffle off, you know, traditional, complete higher-paid traditional workers for favor of lower-wage, you know, workers in these new plants building their electric vehicles. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but, I mean, if history keeps repeating itself, what else would it be?
That's exactly what it looks like.
That's what it looks
whoever
like.
Whoever has the TV on in the background, Gary, mute your phone. Can you mute, please?
Yeah, if you're not speaking, mute your phone, please.
I mean, I think the bottom line is the history is pretty clear. Being a partner, you know, like I said, they brought it on in the mid-'80s as a solution, supposedly, to Japanese industry that was coming into America. That's why they decided to bring it on, and they really didn't bring it on until after the NUMMI, and General Motors, at least, and NUMMI in the early 90s, they took that infrastructure from the Japanese and they brought it into the U.S. plants. And that partnership that we know of today, and really, like what Paul said, it really just created this bureaucracy of partnerships within all the locals. And that's where it's turned into the culture of the administrative caucus from the top all the way to the floor. So it's that culture we got to change, or we are going to repeat history.
Yeah, that's a culture.
I definitely agree with that.
I wanted to summarize that, like a bigger picture, like the history of everything, because that really is the truth. Right. There's really nothing to debate other than these guys saying, oh, we'll promise you we'll do something different. Well, so far, there's no one's done anything different.
All right. Yeah, people that are getting horsewhipped on the plant floor need to realize they got to vote, because there's 10 or 15% of the workforce that's happy with what they've got. You know, jointness has created a lot of cushy jobs, a lot of air-conditioned office jobs. These people are going to vote for what we've got right now. You need to show up and outvote them.
Yeah, well, in the local levels, what it really created is a system where everybody wishes they could have one of them off-the-line cushy jobs, so they all suck up to everybody to hopefully one day get one of them, when the average worker actually, they're working like it's 1930 again. They're busting their ass, and they can't get committee calls.
Yeah.
So hopefully that the people just understand and open their eyes, look at the reality around you and say, okay, enough's enough.
I
thought it was interesting in the last contract how they were going through the highlights, and I'm talking about General Motors, and they were talking about the highlights and how we were going to be able to keep, I don't remember, it's something about training and keep those appointed jobs. And in our plan, I know we have, I think there might be two, but either way, I thought, I don't care about that. You know, like, if you got to take that out to get us something better, I'm all for it. And I was very irritated with that. Like, that was some great thing that somebody was going to be able to keep their appointed job, and they put that in the highlights.
Yeah.
I mean,
one thing, think about this, though, what Mike said. I already, if you think about it, all these jobs he's talking about, they're going to start up the electronic field, and we're going to still be working. They're going to hire people in there. The language is you cannot displace another union worker. So you're screwed. Seniority's not going to pay in that kind of transfer position. We've seen it all, have we not?
Right.
A lot of it's going to be automated, too. They don't wind these electric motors by hand. They're done by a CNC winding machine.
Right. And the biggest travesty of the last contract was that we opened up and gave a whole new portion of the contract to the language for temporaries only. Because the contract before, we got the Tier 2 in progression workers, and this last one, and so we can have more language on how we can use slave labor, at-will employees, basically, whenever we want. That's the travesty of the last contract.
Right.
You know?
Well, according to Brian Zeff, he said that the number one issue on everybody's mind going into the 19 contract was the temporary language. That's not true. It has been all the way since 2009. Every single negotiation, the number one is the COLA.
Well, we were out there hollering solidarity, and That was one of the big
things. Well, yeah, and, okay, and then the tier two language is the other thing, but it wasn't about the temp. It was about the tier two language. Hire people in and eliminate the second tier. Bring everybody up to traditional, not just in wages, but in benefits too. Give them their pension.
Right. I don't know about you guys, but I felt like a fool. I felt like a fool after that whole strike was over. I felt like they made a fool of us out there. That's how I felt.
Absolutely. Absolutely they did. Because, and I said this before, I'll say it again, they had that contract 2 weeks before we went on strike with the same contract. They put that language out there. They had that language, everything that they said. They had that a week before we went out. And that's exactly why they took us out, was to cool us off and show us and then cool us down so we could so they could control us better. Because
people would go to get rid of the stockpile, Scott. If you remember right, they had 180-day stockpile. They got a big stockpile right now, and I'm trying to warn you people right now because of the chip. So when it comes contract time, they might be able to sit on their ass for a while and play hard nose. But with the clowns we got at the top of the table, they're gonna have this. It wouldn't surprise me if that contract's already negotiated and they won't put a date on it this time around. I don't think because of how it was fucked up with the last one. I'll let you go on that.
Yeah.
They're not getting smarter about negotiating. Getting smarter about hiding what they do.
You're right.
I'm gonna read this.
A lot of challenges for them, and you guys keep getting smarter every contract, and they're learning from their mistakes to try to hide it.
We got a phone call. Hold on, we got about 12 and a half minutes, but three. I'm gonna put you on right now. I don't recognize your head.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't recognize. 12 minutes is all I need. I haven't spoken to you in a while, so I thought I'd call in for your 12 and a half minutes and say hi.
Okay,
well,
hi.
Hello.
I'm sure you don't even recognize the voice now.
Okay,
hey.
I'm in the green room.
Oh, okay.
All right, so they go to the green room. I'm going to read this real quick. Brian, I borrowed this from you earlier this week. It's for down in... local 140 for the they do the Wagoneer. Anyway, it says,
okay.
We had a meeting with Stellantis Chief Manufacturing Officer Arnaud Dubouf today, and what he said and had to say about Warren Truck Assembly was not good. The future of the Wagoneer at Warren Truck is at risk. Our livelihoods are in jeopardy, in bold letters. The defects of the trucks is above unacceptable, and the absenteeism is at 15%. They are giving us until March to decrease absenteeism and increase quality. If this is not improved significantly, the company is not willing to allocate any future products to Warren Truck. Based off his visit today, Friday, he will inform us if third shift will be returning next week, which I'm not sure if they are or not. Quality. And the paint shop has improved since his last visit. Great job, paint shop. The same energy needs to be transferred to General Assembly. All these negatives can be reversed. We have done it before, and I have faith we can do it again. We are the best truck builders in the world. Let's keep it that way. If your ability to do a good job is not being supported, please speak up and say something so that the issue can be corrected. In solidarity, Eric Graham, Local 140. So, you know, there's a couple, three ways you can take this letter, but you're dealing with absenteeism. I don't know why. You've got all the temps in the world at your disposal. Quality, well, it's because you're using all these temps and doing a different job every day, and you don't know how to do the job. Well, you need it to do a quality job because you keep rotating them. Anyway.
I mean, you got these people on 6-10s, 7-10s. They're burnt out. They're tired. They're not getting no time off. And so they've,
you know, when you look at the atmosphere in these facilities, these people are just done. They're tired. Then on top of that, when you start looking at quality, a lot of the parts that go into these vehicles are made in other countries, and you got engineering flaws. So how is it our fault that there's, you know, things going wrong with these vehicles as far as the quality is concerned? Why don't, you know, it starts with management. And so if there's quality issues, it starts with management. It starts with your engineers. It starts with your manufacturers. It don't start with labor. And they're always constantly blaming labor. And that's the shit that I get tired of.
They're also
take the lowest bid supplier and expect the highest quality.
They're deceptive when they talk about absenteeism. If you're on vacation, you're absent. If you had a, if you're on a personal leave, you're absent. If you're on family leave, you're absent. You know, we've got an aging workforce, and a lot of people are taking care of their parents or whatever, and they don't want to acknowledge
these jobs. These jobs, a lot of these jobs don't have ergonomics. People getting hurt, and then when they get hurt, the company's changing their coatings, and they're firing these people.
Right.
And the union's not doing anything to get these people back. So there's a lot of foul play going behind closed doors when it comes down to the local leadership and management. Mm. But the reality is, if management's got time to play golf for 2 hours during lunchtime or 3 hours, don't be focused on us on the floor, because it's their job to run these facilities. And if you don't know how to run it, then that damn degree that you got don't mean nothing, because you got to have some common sense. Management's job is to make sure that the maintenance is being performed on these lines, on all the equipment, and it's their job to make sure that there's no engineering defects in these parts, and that their manufacturing specs that are building these parts overseas are being up to par. So I'm tired of them making up excuses, trying to blame us. Ever since they introduced that got rid of time and a half and introduced alternative work schedules, people don't even have time to cut their grass, let alone get their bills paid or spend any time with their family. So management could kiss my ass. I'm so full of their crap and their lies and trying to blame us for everything that goes wrong.
Right. Yeah, I'll say this, too. It frustrates me because I hear this a lot from different locals where they revert it back to the membership as, we got to do this, we got to do that. We're having problems with absenteeism. That's my biggest one. It really burns my ass because
management and the leadership is sitting in an air-conditioned office all day. They don't have to worry about injuries. So it's easy for them to sit there and talk smack and put a letter out towards the membership and blame them. Now, ain't it?
Well, think about this, guys.
The bottom
We're trying
line,
to build
they
a work.
The bottom line is they created the environment. The worker has no say in the environment. For many decades, there was never any issues with manpower because it's a cost of business. You have replacement operators, and we had a good system of absenteeism where you'd have coverage. In 2011, in the Big Three, what they did was they went down to poverty, a point system where you could take 5 days off a year, basically. And what it really did was people that actually had medical issues reverted them to go to FMLA and shit like that, which never was ever a problem in the auto industry up until that point. And the powers to be knew that that was going to be the fallout from that, but they didn't care. They wanted it. So they went to a basic system where you could take 5 days off a year, and other than that, you're going to get rode up until you're fired. And then it created this environment. And then what happened from that environment? The people that are actually ill or have issues or problems, well, they go to FMLA. They got to do what they have to do to live. And then what happens? Our own union and the company blames those people for doing what they have to do following federal guidelines. That's bullshit that they blame people. They blame the members actually busting their asses. That's something that really frustrates me. It's just
another thing that crossed my tail is think about this, guys. They want us to build a world-class vehicle with the cheapest parts on the planet. Think about that.
Yeah.
That's right.
You're right about that. We got about 5 minutes to go, kids. I do have a heart out, and I apologize for that, but there's nothing I can do about it. I had a prior commitment that I forgot all about. And I apologize. We'll try to.
Right to have your own life. So on.
So 5 minutes to sum up whatever it is that you're going to sum up.
Good night, y'all.
Adrian, you know what to do about how to contribute to Brian?
Oh, yes, please. If you will, please contribute to our campaign. We're still trying to get enough monies to send out flyers to the retirees. It's a Cash App, $ committee, VLK. If you don't have Cash App and you want to send a check or money order, you can send it to CTE4, VLK, IUAW President, P.O. Box 2483, Belleville, Belleville, Michigan, 48112. Thank you.
Adrian, do you want to bring up the meet and greet?
Yes, we'll be having a meet and greet on October the 30th. More information will follow as soon as I can get a number for how many people. It's going to be free, and I'm going to tell you that it will be in Shelby Township. Within the next week, I will be putting out more information on that once we get everything set up. Thank you.
There you go. All right, everybody. And go ahead, Paul.
One point I wanted to make about absenteeism, if you have a older plant with a high seniority workforce, you have a lot of people that are contractually able to take, you know, like 4 or 5 weeks off every year, but they get counted as absent.
Yeah, you're right. And Scotty?
Good night, Rebel Rosers.
Good night, everybody.
I'll call you. Good night, everybody.
Give me a call.
Good night.
Good night, Adrian. Good night, Jimmy. Good night, Brian. Good night to everybody that's on the show. And Paul.
See you, guys.
And Stephanie. Love hearing your voice.
Bye, guys.
Can anybody hear this? I got to know because last week I couldn't.
I hear it.
Thank God. All right, everybody. Have a great night. Good night.
Well, I hate to leave you, babe.
Peace out.
Oh, me,
babe. 90 seconds to go.
Cause I love you so. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you.
Oh, yeah.
I really must say, oh, good night. Good night.